This is part of our ongoing series at KGVM on voting and voting regulations and voting rights. And so today it's the 18th of September, and I'm at the county courthouse. I'm here with our clerk and recorder, Eric Simrod, and his election manager, Casey Hayes. We wanted to have a discussion today about the process of voting, specifically here in Gallatin County. I know there have been a lot of discussions, and there's a lot of concern about the way the elections would be conducted here in the time of COVID and concerns about election integrity. And it seems from looking, when I look around and see comments that people are making and stuff, that there's probably a pretty big difference of understanding across the population about how our elections actually work. And so I was hoping we could have a discussion today about that and maybe give some people some more information so they can make informed decisions about the election, how trustworthy it is. So I was hoping you could just, first of all, explain how people can register to vote. Is it possible to register to vote without coming to the courthouse at this point in time? And if so, what information do people need to have to do that? And how can you actually confirm if someone is registering and they're not here? How do you verify their identity and some of those issues about registration?
Right. So short answer is yes, we can register people to vote via email now. And how we do that is they fill out the Montana voter registration application form off of our website or the Montana Secretary of State's website, and complete the form and then print it out and sign it with a wedding signature, shoot a picture of it or scan it, and then email that to our elections email address. And we can accept that for registration.
Our email address is gallatin.elections@gallatin.mt.gov. Or if you go to our website, there is a link to contact the elections department where you can attach that document, and then it'll come straight to that same email box.
Okay. So if people do that, is there any additional information they need to provide to help you confirm identity? Or
so on the form itself, it actually has two different options here. If you have a Montana driver's license, you place your Montana driver's license number on that. And we have a voter verify system that's built into Montana Votes. And it automatically verifies that license with the data that is provided on the form.
Okay.
And then yep, likewise, the Social Security number is verified through Social Security Administration. That is through the Help America Vote Act, Help America Voter Verify. Montana Votes is our statewide database, and it was developed after the Help America Vote Act. So this is all kind of as a result of the 2002 Help America Vote Act. But by and large, if they don't have those two items, they can use whether it is tribal identification, a utility bill, et cetera, in order to just begin the process of becoming registered to vote, if provisionally. And then once the individual's identity can be verified through Voter Verify, either MVD or Social Security Administration, then they would become active and not provisional.
Okay. So for people that maybe have some concerns or uncertainty about this being conducted by email, this process, how different is this from the process, say, when somebody's out knocking on doors during campaign season and they're carrying a clipboard that allows them to register voters? Is there any difference in the process between those two?
It's simply the way that it's received, in whether it would be by mail and or in person, or in this instance through an email. It is still the same document that is signed with a wedding signature. There are no stylus or digital signatures allowed, so that we can use that as an exhibit to verify a signature that is on an absentee ballot or ballot that's returned by mail, one and the same.
And another point with that is that if somebody is going door to door registering people to vote, you don't know that those forms are going to get to our office. This way you're in direct contact with the election office and you know that we've received it.
Right. Okay. Can you maybe run through the deadlines for registration and if it's still possible this year? I've seen, oddly enough, I've seen some people suggesting that it is not possible to do same-day registration this year.
No, that's not correct. Typically, in an election, the late registration period begins 30 days prior to the election. But for this and the primary election, the directive that the governor issued suspends that and then creates the late registration period beginning 10 days prior to the election. So late registration begins on the 27th of October, which then means that regular registration closes Monday, October 26th. The distinction there is that after the 26th, beginning on the 27th, you will need to appear in person in order to register to vote. That includes Election Day. So the only time where the late registration period closes, which is typical for all elections, is at noon the day before the election so that we can create stasis in the registration database. Six counties are running a polling place election. They need to print registers for those polls, and that's what that period of time is for. So, but otherwise, no voters will, just as with past elections, be able to register on Election Day, both here at the courthouse and then at the satellite office at the fairgrounds.
Okay, great.
Yep, and we have multiple satellite offices that we're going to be running over a period of time throughout the month of October. We have a list of those here, and so there's a couple different things. We'll have ballot drop-offs that will be open at these at the various city offices across the county throughout the entire period after ballots have been mailed. And we're mailing those ballots out on the 9th of October. And so those are going to be, of course, we can receive ballots here at the election office. They'll be at the Belgrade City Clerk's Office, Manhattan City Clerk's Office, Three Forks City Clerk's Office, the West Yellowstone City Clerk's Office, the Big Sky Water and Sewer District Office, and the ASMSU Office in the Strand Union Building up on campus. So those are just ballot drop-off sites. Then we're going to have these satellite offices that are going around the county, and you know it's a big lift to get this set up because we've never done anything like this before, and so it's definitely pandemic-driven to have this going on. If we were having a polling place election, you know these kinds of things would be unnecessary. Right. So we're going to be taking a DES trailer that we've got and pulling that to different locations around the county. Starting October 7th and 8th, we'll be at the City of Belgrade office. And for all these, the hours are going to be from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day. And then the Three Forks Library on October 13th and 14th, Town of Manhattan Municipal Offices on October 15th and 16th, the Town of West Yellowstone, October 20th and 21st, Big Sky Water and Sewer District, October 22nd and 23rd, and then on the campus at the Brick Breeden Fieldhouse, the West Side Lobby will be there October 27th through 30th. And then, of course, the big one, which is going to be on Election Day, we're going to have not just here at the courthouse, but also the satellite office at the fairgrounds, and that's going to be a big operation. We're going to hopefully be able to take the line that usually appears here in the courthouse and goes down the street and have that be in the parking lot over at the fairgrounds. So,
yeah, it's a little bit of building the airplane while you're flying it, so to speak.
Sure.
But this isn't new in elections. It's new to Montana. Gallatin County is trying to be innovative per the directive. We want to ensure that voters have the opportunity to register or change their registration without having to come into Bozeman in order to do it, mm-hmm. and that in these locations you have the opportunity to be register to vote, update your registration, then receive a ballot, and then vote there and deposit your ballot out of doors so that it'll be under a covered tent. Voters with disabilities should make arrangements so that we can ensure that the auto mark is set up, the ballot marking device is set up for them, and any other reasonable accommodation that we need to make in order to ensure that they have same or similar access to the satellite offices and the services therein. So just as Eric said, the intent of this is to ensure that people don't have to come to Bozeman, don't have to wait until Election Day. These opportunities are essentially coming to them, And with this election, especially, we want voters to understand that there are opportunities to vote in person, and if they would like to do that, to not wait until Election Day, to do it at an opportunity that is convenient for them but is not the very last day.
Okay. Go to one of these satellite locations.
Right, or come
close to their home.
Exactly, or beginning October 2nd, people can get their ballot in person here at the courthouse, and you can vote it here at the courthouse, deposit here at the courthouse. That is beginning on the 2nd and for all the way up and through Election Day, with the exception of weekends and holidays. Again, it's an opportunity for those who wish to vote in person to do it, but not do it all at the same time.
That opportunity to do it here at the courthouse, is that any different than it's been in past elections, like recent past elections?
No, it's typical with even polling place elections or mail ballot elections to be able to vote in person at the county election office beginning 30 days prior to an election. In a polling place election, that is typically referred to early voting generally, but we refer to it in the election speak as in-person absentee voting. Absentee voting means that you are absent from your polling place on Election Day. And if you are voting in-person absentee, that means that you've come to get your ballot from the election office and then vote it there at that time. Or you can come and get it from our office and take it with you and then put it in one of the many places of deposit that are available throughout the county.
I remember years and years ago, when to vote absentee, you used to have to show evidence that you couldn't be there for the election. But that changed quite a while ago, I believe.
Yeah, no excuse absenteeism began in the late 90s in Montana. I don't know exactly, I remember which date. But yeah, some states that have difficulties with mail ballot elections or absentee elections, it's generally because their laws have requirements for to be excused in order to qualify for absenteeism. But with states that have no excuse absenteeism, generally the laws have enough allowances so that there are processes inside of those laws that are created that allow for the acceptance of those ballots and then the issuance and processes that come along with those.
Yeah, I kind of want to hope to remind listeners that a lot of the things that are coming out, they're not new. These are processes, procedures that have not been forced into existence because of the pandemic. They will probably be used more than they have in the past, but they're not new, and people shouldn't be concerned that they haven't been road tested, if you will, that they are.
Yeah, we've been conducting mail ballots in Gallatin County for a long time. I can remember running smaller district elections back in the 90s this way. Mm-hmm. We started conducting school district elections and municipal elections in 2011 and 12, in that time range. And then the previous clerk, Charlotte Mills, worked very hard to get all the school districts on board with conducting their elections this way. And now every single school district in Gallatin County, every special district, every municipality, when we're conducting municipal elections on odd years, they're all done by mail ballot, 100%.
And there's no difference in the conduct of those elections that we are running routinely versus the conduct of this election. It is under the same chapter of the same title of Montana statute. So there are no exemptions or exceptions on how those ballots are issued, how those ballots are received, and how they're processed or counted.
I was wondering if you could maybe explain, because this is, if you venture into the comments section on any social media, right, one of the things that's gotten the most discussion and that seems to have captured people's attention the most is just uncertainty about the process of sending out ballots and who they get sent to. And I was wondering if you could just explain for this election, if it's the same as the primary election, and just kind of go through who you send ballots to. And
right. Yeah, we send ballots to registered active voters. And it will be the same as what we did in the primary election. Of course, your envelope will be a little smaller because it's just going to be one ballot sheet rather than three. that's that talk about a heavy lift. Running a primary with three different parties is a major lift. So, it's only active registered voters that are getting those ballots. And then also there's provisional voters.
Provisional voters, provisional registration are those to reflect back onto our conversation about verifying identification. Those who apply to vote, but they're for whatever reason, they do not verify through SSA or MVD. They are provisionally registered, and then we work with them and those agencies to continue to determine or figure out if they are U.S. citizens, et cetera, and qualified to vote. But we do not suspend their enfranchisement as a result of that, and that's what provisional registration is all about. So active and provisionally registered voters are the ones that receive those. Currently in Gallatin County, we have 71,801 of those voters, and that is growing every day. Over the past week, we've gotten 1,062 voters that either registered or updated their registration.
Okay. So if you can remind us just exactly what the definition of an active voter is.
Sure. An active voter is one who has participated in federal general elections and or if they have not participated in those elections, they would have received notification required under the National Voter Registration Act to determine whether or not they are still residing within the county, registered to vote, etc. Two mailings are sent out to those individuals who do not vote in a federal general election. If they do not respond to the second mailing after 30 days, that voter's registration becomes inactive. Also, if in a mail ballot election or in a polling place election with absentee ballots, if a ballot is returned to this office as undeliverable and the voter recipient does not respond to a forwarded mailing that says, are you still registered at this address, etc., with no response after 30 days to that notice, that voter becomes inactive. And so in those two instances, voters are inactive, and it's generally because of inactivity and a lack of response to a confirmation mailing. It's really easy to reactivate if nothing in your registration has changed. If you still reside at the same address, if nothing has changed, you just didn't vote in the 2018 or 2016 general elections and did not respond to the confirmation mailings, only a phone call away and you have been reactivated. If we can just confirm that all of your information is still the same, we'll flip the switch over to active and the voter will be sent a ballot. If there is a change to the registration, if they no longer reside at the same address, that would mean that they could potentially be in a different precinct and need a different ballot style issued to them. Also, we would need a good address to send that to. So through that process, you would submit a voter registration application and indicate that there is an update on that application. And just as we talked about earlier, you would submit that by mail, email, or in person. And then once that has been processed, you would turn from inactive to active and be issued the ballot.
So it's a very, very simple process to be reactivated.
Inactivation generally is a lack of voting and a lack of response.
Okay. And I think it's worthwhile to point out to people when they, you know, when they're concerned that you've got this list of voters and maybe they've moved and you don't have an accurate address. And so, you know, I'm not sure what exactly all of the concerns are, but I think it's worth pointing out that in those same circumstances, I think you kind of touched on this, they could go into a polling place if there was a polling place election. They could go to the wrong precinct and vote because, as far as you know, they still live at their old address, right?
So in an instance where it's a polling place election, that voter who is inactive would still need to appear at the polling place that they are assigned to. They would be on that register and noted as inactive, and then they would, in appearing there at the polling place, be able to reactivate and also update. But if they were to show up at a polling place at which they were not assigned, they would not be able to vote. They would not be on that register. But in this particular instance, it's less restrictive, and they don't have to wait until a single day to make any of those changes or updates.
Right. Okay.
Just for purposes of understanding, In Gallatin County, we have 11,697 inactive voters.
Okay. And 71,801
are active or provisional. So it's a small segment that is inactive. However, relative to other counties in the state, we have a high number of inactive voters, and it's usually due to the transient nature of the voting population in Gallatin County, also Missoula County, generally where there are folks coming and going for a period of a few years. You're going to see a high level of inactive or a high number of inactive voters. That is to talk sort of about the process of mail ballot elections and how those sort of are self-cleaning, if you will. When you're conducting these ballots by mail election and continually sending out ballots, when they are undeliverable because somebody moves, they will not get another ballot until they've updated their information. So it's sort of the way that in creating mail ballot election law that they built into it that feature where it sort of takes care of itself in regard to the address list of voters.
Right. Mail ballots, absentee ballots, they're not forwardable. And so they do not follow you when you move. They mm-hmm. come back to us and are processed. We receive them as undeliverable, and we know that we have them. And so when you can come in on election day or any time up to election day and pick up that ballot and change your address, you can vote that ballot, or you can we can void that ballot and choose to vote in the new precinct if it's a different ballot.
And I think you mentioned that the ballots can't be forwarded, but when you get them back, you send out a question about if they're still one to be registered.
Your notices,
and that is forwardable.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Notices are always forwardable. Ballots are never forwardable.
That's one of the security features of a ballot.
Right. So I think you said this already. The procedure that you'll use this fall for the general election is not different from the procedure you used in the primary, other than a less bulky envelope.
Sure. I mean, the procedures are prescribed in statute and rule. And then processes, sort of internal processes, from county to county, jurisdiction to jurisdiction, is determined on the volume of mail that you have and the number of personnel that are there to process that mail. So from county to county, the procedures are all the same because they're prescribed in law and rule. But in so far as how one county makes the process of, you know, scanning and verifying all of that, timelines, et cetera, it all comes down again to the volume of mail and the number of people there to process it. We have amplified the number of personnel that we're bringing into this election so that we can ensure that from day to day we are trying to get everything that has been received on that day at least receipted in, so that if a voter is looking on the My Voter page to know whether or not their ballot has been received, that we can at least get as close to day in, day out turnaround on those.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to point out. I think that if people, you know, obviously with the things going on with the post office and stuff, people have some uncertainty. And so that's a good thing to note, that they can find out if their ballot's been received. And I think this is a thing people maybe don't think about a lot when they think about processing ballots. It's like they can know if you've received it. They can't know if you've counted it or not, right? Because you're not supposed to be able to match that ballot up after you've received it and started processing it with the person who voted.
What happens, I guess, in procedural, when a ballot is received in, it's scanned, it's received, but then the next step after that is the verification of signature. And as many exhibits in a voter's file of signatures that we can find from the documents that they've submitted are compared against the signature on the ballot. There's a very, very small number of ballots that are rejected for mismatching signature. The majority of the ballots that are rejected for signature reasons are a lack of signature. People will send it without having signed it. So it's very important that people understand that that signature has to be on there in order to be accepted, and then that it has to match. We have to go through, in order to reject a ballot, two individuals in a managerial or supervisor's position in order to reject that signature. But accepting the signature is as simple as the individual, the trained clerk who's looking through that signature exhibit file to find one that matches. We understand that signatures change over time. Young voters are developing a signature. Aging voters, their signature may deteriorate. And then some folks will use varying and different signatures on varying documents. So we will always try to get as many exhibits in order to compare with, because we want to ensure that if that vote is legally cast by the voter, that it is accepted. Now, once it's accepted, that ballot is separated in its secrecy envelope from the affirmation envelope that it was returned in that has the voter's identifying information. That secrecy ballot remains sealed until 3 days before the election now with the new laws. We can start opening those the Thursday prior to the Tuesday election. So those 2 days used to be that it was just the Monday before that we had to start. So now we have, instead of 1 day, 3 days during business hours. It's an observable process. Essentially, you have election personnel removing ballots from secrecy envelopes, and then you do a one-to-one count to make sure that there's one ballot per envelope. And then those numbers go into a reconciliation process. And what we do is then from each of those batches that hold a certain unspecific number of ballots, those same batches that are processed together are counted together so that you, after you count the sheets through the tabulators, you're comparing the number of ballots counted to the number of ballots received. And that is all examined in the canvas process 2 weeks after the close of the election, wherein the Board of County Canvassers, which is the commission and the clerk and recorder, they analyze the data to make sure that there isn't any error, or if there is an error or omission, that it is not material to the outcome of the election. So that is sort of the check and balance in all of it. How do we know that your vote was counted? We know whether or not your ballot was received, and then based on precinct to precinct, you would be able to see if there was any misalignment between the number of ballots received and the ballots counted.
So it received, accepted, counted, and we can track those numbers all the way through, and we reconcile everything at the end at the canvas, and our canvases have been coming out extremely accurate.
So one of the things that I see frequently, and you know, this got fuel poured on it by a lot of different people, is that absentee ballot voting is fine, but universal mail-in ballot voting is not fine. And apparently one of the reasons that people have that idea is that you have to request an absentee ballot, but you don't have to request this other ballot. We've already talked about you have to be an active voter, so you've passed the bar is set fairly high already, but I wanted to double check my understanding. If you're an absentee voter, you do not have to send in a request every year to get your ballot. Is that correct?
Yeah. So up and until I think it was the 2017 legislature, your absentee status was a 2-year period, and then every 2 years you would be sent a notice saying you need to renew your absentee status. But then through legislation, they made the absentee list permanent unless an individual opts out. So now, once you have signed up to receive an absentee ballot going forward, until a time that a voter decides that they no longer wish to receive a ballot by mail, that will continue. The only one now that remains a non-permanent absentee status is the military and overseas voters, because federal law requires that be a 2-calendar-year period. But otherwise, insofar as absentee voting in Montana goes, once you sign up, you are on the list until you remove yourself.
And that is a very rare occurrence.
Very rare.
Mostly people are requesting. I mean, this is an all-mail ballot election, and we're receiving hundreds of absentee requests because I don't know if people misunderstand that they have to have that. But, you know, we use that to update information and to make sure that their absentee status is correct. But the numbers of absentee voters in Gallatin County are quite high.
Yeah, they're increasing Our absentee number right now is 61,105 voters. If you compare that to the whole number of registered voters, including inactive voters, that's 73%. But if you look at active voters, those voters who would receive a ballot in a mail ballot election, it's 85%. And that's increased 5% over the last 4 months. As individuals are submitting absentee ballots, they may not be at their residence address right now and need it. Their mail ballot that would go to their mailing address, whether it be their P.O. box or their residence address, may need to go somewhere else, and they could submit an absentee application for that. We have those very few instances, what we call election-specific absentee voters. We have one of those in the county right now, and that's just an individual who for this election has made a change specific to this election on where their ballot needs to go. We have a high number of seasonal absentee voters. Those are individuals who may reside in another state for a period of time throughout the year but claim Montana as their residence. And so the snowbirds who go to Arizona or those who have other properties somewhere else and reside there for a period of time but are not registered in that state, their ballot, depending on where they are at a certain time of the year, will go either to one residence there or their residence here. That's a seasonal, and they just, that voter sets up the date range with our office so that we know if there's an election occurring inside of their specific date range, where that ballot needs to be sent.
So you kind of already went through the process when ballots are coming back, how they're processed. And so you said the signature on each received ballot after it's been logged in as received, it's checked by a person. And so the process there is really not significantly different from the process. If some, like when I went down to the polling place, it happened, I guess, on the front end, but I had to sign in and that signature was compared to my signature on file at the polling place, right?
No.
Right.
When you sign a register, that signature is not verified. It is, you will provide, in order to vote at a polling place, you'll provide identification. It does not have to be photo ID. It can be a utility bill that has your name and your address on it. And then at that point, you will sign the register. And then when the registers come back to our office, the actual signature is not verified. It's just that the individual voted is scanned in so that they receive voting credit and that they are not pulled into what we talked about earlier if through the National Voter Registration Act and inactivity. There is no requirement in a polling place election for that signature to be verified, and that is one of the greater security features of mail ballots and voting by absentee, is that the individual who is voting that ballot and then signing the affirmation envelope, that is verified against the signatures in their record. At a polling place, that signature is not verified. Just to kind of give everybody the understanding of it, once an individual enters the polling place and signs the register, they are handed a ballot, and that ballot is voted, and then it is put into the ballot box. But nothing is contained with that ballot that identifies the voter. So you wouldn't be putting an envelope inside of, or a ballot inside of an envelope to put it in the box. So once that ballot is in the box, it is unknown who it is attached to. So when ballots come back from a polling place, the reconciliation process there is the number of signatures in the register versus the number of ballots in the box, and that's what has to match. But at no point in time are those signatures verified.
Right. Okay. So hopefully people have a clearer idea now of the fact that there are maybe even more security features built into a mail-in election than there are in a regular election. Well, by regular, I mean one where we have polling places, and that there are significant efforts made to make sure that the right people get their ballot. Even if somebody gets a ballot and it is a mistake because they moved or whatever, if they voted and sent it in, it's not going to count, right? If they aren't properly registered and can't verify their signature. So hopefully people can take some comfort in that there are a significant number of security features built into the election to make sure it's the integrity is maintained.
Yeah, and you know, when we have a signature that doesn't verify for some reason, or that they didn't sign, the most common thing, we contact that voter immediately that day. We have somebody designated in the office that's their job. Uh-huh. And so we'll phone them, we'll email them, however we can get a hold of them quickest to resolve these issues. And you know, quite a few of them do get resolved. And so their ballots can be counted, mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't.
Those voters are sent a notice. If we can make contact with them, the law requires the most expedient method possible. That's why we ask that voters provide their phone number or email address when they register. And then if we can make contact with that voter, we will send the notice of rejection to them through that most expedient method, usually by email. Then the voter would print off that notice, sign it, and provide their driver's license or other form of identification along with the rejection notice and return it to our office by mail or in person or by email, all allowed in law. And then based on their submission of the rejection notice being resolved, if it is submitted to our office by the Friday after the election, then we can remove the rejection from that and have it counted during what we call the provisional and final count, which is the Monday after an election.
Okay. I think we've already gone through this, but, you know, as I said, certain, you know, with certain things happening with the post office, I think people, even people, myself included, that are, you know, comfortable with the idea of the ballot being mailed out and voting it by mail, if they're concerned about the delivery of the ballot after it's been voted, you said that you'll have these drop-off locations around the county and that you'll also have these kind of mobile voting stations. People can drop off their ballots after they voted them there, and they can bring them down to the courthouse until 8 p.m. on election day?
Correct.
And just to confirm, because I sometimes don't remember for sure where we're at with this, in Montana, do the ballots have to be received by close of poll on election day, or they have to be postmarked?
No postmarks count. Currently, there's a lawsuit. The Democratic Party has filed suit to try to extend the deadline to be postmarks accepted. However, that is not in statute. And until that changes, we want to remind everyone that a postmark is not sufficient for the ballot to be counted. It must be received by 8 p.m. on election day at the courthouse or at one of the places of deposit on election day. We have those regular places of deposit. We sometimes refer to them as regular. That just means that they are there from the time that ballots are mailed out until election day. Then on election day, we have additional places of deposit. This was similar to what we had out in the primary. Not only are those regular places of deposit open, but so are the fairgrounds, Hope Lutheran Church in Bozeman, the Belgrade Special Events Center, River Rock Community Center, the Gallatin Gateway Community Center, the Manhattan Christian High School, and the Bridger Canyon Fire Station. All of those facilities will have in their parking lots staff and a ballot box on election day from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. to receive those ballots. So a voter can check on the My Voter page to find those locations. We will have a Google Map app that they can check on our website to find out where they are in relation to the closest place of deposit so that they can, on election day, ensure that that gets in there. Like we say, if it's at our office or at inside of one of those ballot boxes by 8 p.m. on election day, it will be received and counted.
Okay. So if somebody, say they were mailed a ballot and they voted it and then for whatever reason they checked the page and it's not marked as received or they didn't get around to sending it, they can come down and vote in person at one of these stations?
No. The only places where you can vote in person will be on election day at the courthouse here in Bozeman or at the fairgrounds or at one of those satellite locations on those specific days. But the places of deposit are not locations for in-person voting. They are simply the drop boxes, deposit boxes for ballots.
But they can come to the courthouse. They can vote in person, and you know, if maybe they checked on the voter register or My Voter page and thought their ballot hadn't been received, they decided they were going to make a trip into Bozeman. They were going to come do this, and then their ballot was received in the interim. They're going to show up and they're going to be told that they've already voted?
Yeah, so it can happen a number of ways. A voter sends a ballot back to our office through the mail, and if it's done a week prior to the election, there is from our perspective, no reason why it wouldn't be received in. We work hand in glove with our local postmasters. Beginning the week prior to the election, through those local postmasters and post offices, we divert the mail, election mail, from the processing centers in Great Falls and Billings, and it comes straight to Bozeman, so it alleviates a one-day turnaround. And then it should get to us as in an expedient fashion. However, if the ballot is mailed a week prior or within the week prior to the election, there's no assurance that it would get to us. But what a voter can do is if they find that they're growing anxious about the status of their ballot having been in the mail and whether or not it's going to arrive on time, they can come to the election office and vote in person. What will happen is that they'll have to sign an affidavit stating that they're requesting a replacement ballot. The ballot that was previously issued is voided. Each ballot has a unique ballot ID. It's not anywhere on the ballot. It exists only in our database, and it is for the purposes of receiving the ballot. So in order for a ballot to be received, it has to be issued, and in being issued, it is given a unique identifier. What happens is when we void a ballot, we void that issuance number. So if somebody looks on their affirmation envelope, they'll see a barcode. And that's where that number resides when we scan it in to receive it. It is making the comparison from the ballot ID that was issued from the system versus the ballot ID that's being received in. So what would happen is the voter would request a replacement ballot, and then the originally issued ballot would be voided, and then the second issue would have a unique ID, and then that would be the only one that could be received. If the first ballot that was voided was returned, it could not be received because the ID is void.
Great. Hopefully that gives some sense of security, too, that it's really not possible for somebody to, as has been suggested, vote by mail and then go and vote in person.
And it also shows that there are legitimate reasons why somebody would vote two ballots. It does happen.
It could happen.
And when people say that, it's like, well, there are good reasons for that, and this is one. And we can track those ballots and ensure that only one of them is going to be counted.
Inside of this affidavit that's signed, the reasons for requesting a replacement ballot is that it was not received, or that it was that the voter made a mistake, or it was lost, damaged, spoiled, or destroyed, that if there were a print error or print omission on the ballots, that they would be able to get that, or in the time where we are processing late registration, that period right before the election, if they are registered in another county in Montana, like we talked about, and that county is conducting a polling place election, we want to ensure that that voter has not voted in that other county and then come across the line to register and vote in ours. And so in so doing, we would be voiding out the ballot in the other county. But if we cannot access, get the county, the previous county, to void out that ballot, that voter is issued a provisional ballot. And once we can determine that they have not voted in their previous jurisdiction, then we can count that ballot. So replacement ballots, provisional ballots, all of that. We do not rush through the process of counting, verifying, and validating these votes. And that's why while counting begins the day before Election Day, it is not over technically until right before the canvass. We do a provisional count that Monday. What we call it a provisional count is typically those who have submitted a provisional ballot or have a provisional registration that has been validated and they are no longer provisional. Those ballots are then received in, verified, and counted the Monday after the Tuesday election.
And they're a very small fraction. It conceivably can change the outcome of the election, but typically not. An example where it did was the primary election for the clerk and recorders on the Republican side back in 2018, when the clerk and recorders candidates were tied after the regular count on Election Day. And so the provisional count determined who the candidate was.
Right. So you've said that the process that you use is in statute, and other than some variations in just the mechanics of it, they're shared across all counties in the state of Montana. Do you have an idea? Is this pretty similar to processes that are used by other states?
I worked at the Secretary of State's office in the election department or division there for 4 years, and states can vary on how they process mail, or if they are an all-mail election state similar to Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Utah. There are best practices that are created through sort of a clearinghouse, the Election Assistance Commission at the federal level, and then through the National Association of Secretary of States and Election Administrators. Those procedures and processes, they don't reside inside a vacuum. Generally, we are very communicative in the election administration field. We're always trying to find best practices from one state to another, one jurisdiction to another. So sometimes what you'll see, especially through legislation, is that a representative or senator in a state legislature has seen something in another state and they want to adopt that in our state. And then that's generally where that sort of practice sharing comes through. We get illuminated to it typically, and then we'll reach out to the legislators to see if that's something that we have the ability or appetite to create in Montana.
I'm probably coming back to this often, but as I said, this is seems to be a lot of the source of concern about this election is just this issue of mail ballots and the difference between absentee ballots and all mail and stuff. And it seems to me, we've already talked about the fact that a lot of our elections, school board elections, special district elections, city municipal elections are all mail already. I seem to recall that there have been discussions at the state level about all elections going to all mail. That is not a new thing with the pandemic, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I think the previous Secretary of State, Linda McCullough, and the Democratic Party in previous legislation have tried and attempted to create what we have in Utah, Colorado, those other states with an all-mail election, opt-in, opt-out. I'm not sure how that legislation has been drafted or crafted, but it has not seen any light outside of committee from my understanding. I don't know that it ever has hit the floor, but I could be completely wrong about that. It is a practice that has gotten some traction from one side of the aisle or the other, but you know, in Helena, every other year for 90 days, a lot of things go on, and and certainly the importance of this or the viability of going to an all-mail election in Montana. We know that we have the blueprint for it. That is how it exists in statute. Truly, it comes down to the representatives and which way they would vote to get it out of committee or passed if it were to get out of a committee.
So there were obviously drivers for this to cause it to be considered in the past that were not the pandemic, and presumably they were not because one side or the other was trying to game the election. Do you have some ideas of what led people to consider going this direction in Montana?
Efficacy and efficiency. You look at, as we talked about, signature verification on a ballot that is received by mail versus the lack of signature verification at a polling place register. There are, inside of our processes, it is much easier and cost-effective for us to be conducting ballots by mail to the point that 85% of the active voters are going to receive their ballot by mail anyway, and that those remaining 15% who are assigned to vote at a polling place, only a fraction of those folks will show up to those polling places to vote. You're not going to get the entirety of that 15%. And from election to election, it can vary on how many people are in those polling places. So what we found over time is that the lines at the polling places are dwindling because less voters are using them, but the line here at the office to register on election day is growing. And where we are putting taxpayers' money, the public assets, in order to conduct the election, we're spending a great deal of time and money to conduct polling place elections that are seeing less and less voters involved in that aspect. So while we look at the growing trend across the state of the majority of voters engaging in the election by absentee, We have to do a cost-benefit analysis from county to county to determine where it is that we're spending and allocating funds and resources inside of an election. Elections are very expensive, and they're required by law. We work tirelessly to ensure that the money that we're spending is spent well, efficiently, and necessarily. So when we look at the resources and time and resources and funding that go into having a polling place open, we kind of have to look at what other counties have had to do in consolidating polling places and thereby creating sort of vote centers. There are a number of alternatives, but what we understand from mail ballot elections, not just this one, but all mail ballot elections, is that there is always an in-person voting option. No one is ever restricted to solely vote through the mail or on their kitchen table, etc. If a voter wishes what we generally refer to as ritualistic voters to come in person and vote their ballot, deposit it in a ballot box, and get their I voted sticker, that has always been an aspect and will continue to be an aspect of mail elections.
And you can tell from the number of registered voters that are registered as absentee voters at 85% right now, the appetite for receiving your ballot by mail is definitely out there. And it's not just any one party. It's across the board.
Yeah, I think that is a number that really needs to be paid attention to. If you look at that number, 85% of the people have already said, regardless of how they got there, they want to vote by mail anyway. We seem to be making much ado about maybe not a very much when we have the gyrations that people are going through about in person, especially when if they want to, they can.
And right? and have been and will continue to be. What happens is politics begins to engage inside of the election. And what we talk about in elections generally is that we are apolitical public servants that exist inside of an apolitical process. We do not invite politics inside of the administration of elections. And in fact, we are trying to remove and keep at bay any politics that wants to influence the conduct of the election. What we're seeing with this election and in previous elections specific to mail ballot voting information is that it has become politicized. And that's exactly what we are trying to avoid, because through politics, misinformation can begin to occur. And what is going on now and what we are battling back against vehemently is the politicizing of a process. It is just as much of a government process as the weighing at the landfill and getting your license plate and any other way that you would interact with your government, which is apolitical. Campaigns and elections are not mutually similar. An election has very little, if anything, to do with a campaign, while a campaign has everything to do with an election. We in election administration understand the distinction there and are trying to educate the public as to the process, how it is apolitical, how it is open and accessible and observable by the public. There is no wizard behind the curtain, so to speak.
Well, I think that's good to know. And I've gotten an opportunity to do this in the past, and I don't know that a lot of people are aware that they can come down and they can observe. If they have concerns about the way that the process works, they can come down to the courthouse and they can participate. They can watch during the provisional ballot counting or any of these different steps in the process to assure themselves and others that the process is being followed. And, you know, hopefully if they understand what the process is, they've got some confidence that as long as it's being followed, we have integrity in the election.
Sure. In past elections, one of the points of concern has been tabulators and counting how the tabulators function and how they count the votes. And through that, we have found the interaction with voters who are skeptical. And in the process of testing these tabulators, we have a public test that occurs the Wednesday before each election. And in that process, we run a set of ballots with a known outcome. And so what we're doing is we're running these ballots to check to verify the accuracy in what would be a known outcome. And in so doing, we have had a number of interactions with the public that result in a positive understanding of how the process works. We welcome voters. We put notices out so that they understand that they can engage in these processes to observe them, and then after they're conducted, to ask questions. We want voters to understand that in the Gallatin County Election Department, the saying is that the election belongs to the voters. It's on loan to us for an election. And we want to make sure that it is done as accurately and effectively as possible. And we also want voters and the public to understand that there is a way for them to engage in the process through observation. While COVID kind of complicates that, we are going to create Zoom meetings and other things inside of the rooms where these processes occur so that people can continue to observe them while not having to be here in person for this election. Observation of the process is very important to us because we don't want to do anything in the vacuum. The only thing that is secret about an election is a voter's ballot.
Well, this has been fantastic information. I was wondering, are there any other thoughts about the integrity or security of the elections that you don't think we've touched on?
Boy, I think we've been pretty wide and broad here.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground for sure.
Overall, we want the public to understand that we are public servants and that our goal in this election is to ensure that it is done safely and that it is done effectively and that voters are not disenfranchised as a result of anything that we would be doing on our end. What we're trying to do is create availability and access. We see elections as inclusive, and that those who are qualified to vote should receive a ballot, and that those who wish to vote should return their ballot, and that it is counted. We take our jobs very seriously, and the role of an election administrator and those of us who work in elections, this oddly enough, becomes a job that provides identity. And what we all and the Clerk and Recorder and Election Administrators Association in Montana want to assure voters of is that we are doing everything that we can and have done everything that we could inside of 2020 with all of the complications of this election. We are problem solvers, professional problem solvers, and problems are not unique to this election. Each election has its own unique set of problems and challenges and obstacles, and it is our duty and our jobs to make sure that those obstacles are not impediments for the public and the voter.
All right. Well, I very much appreciate you taking the time out to walk me through some of these things, to share this information. You know, I would hope that people would have been curious about this in the past, but in this election in particular, I think it's important for people to have accurate information, and so I very much appreciate it. I've been here with Casey Hayes, the election manager for Gallatin County, and Eric Semerod, the Gallatin County Clerk and Recorder, and thank you very much for the interview today. You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman. We are Gallatin Valley Community Radio. We're on your radio dial at 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org. We just want to remind you, in an effort to serve voters in advance of Election Day and to alleviate crowding, the Gallatin County Election Department has developed a mobile satellite office that will be traveling across the county during the month of October to provide voter services in local communities. Gallatin County voters will have the opportunity to register to vote, update their voter registration, and receive a ballot in person. Except for the location on the campus of Montana State University, these services will be provided at an administrative trailer located in the parking lots of the respective locations, not within the following buildings themselves. The locations, dates, and times for each of these stops are as follows. On October 7th and 8th, they will be at the City of Belgrade office at 91 East Central Avenue in Belgrade. On October 13th and 14th, they'll be at the Three Forks Library at 607 South Main Street in Three Forks. October 15th and 16th, they'll be in the Town of Manhattan at the Municipal Offices at 207 South 6th Street. On October 20th and 21st, they'll be in the town of West Yellowstone at the offices there at 440 Yellowstone Avenue. On October 22nd and 23rd, in Big Sky at the Big Sky Water and Sewer District office at 561 Little Coyote Road. And finally, on October 27th through the 30th, they'll be on the campus of Montana State University in the west side lobby of the Brick Breeden Fieldhouse. Again, all of those stops of this mobile elections trailer will be on those dates from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And in addition, the county will be operating places of deposit for ballots that will open beginning October 9th during regular business hours and on election day from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. There will be drop-offs for ballots at the Gallatin County Election Office, 311 West Main in Bozeman, at the Belgrade City Clerk's Office at 91 East Central Avenue in Belgrade, the Manhattan City Clerk's Office at 207 South 6th Street, the Three Forks City Clerk's Office at 206 North Main, West Yellowstone City Clerk's Office at 440 Yellowstone Avenue, the Big Sky Water and Sewer District Office at 561 Little Coyote Road, and at the ASMSU Strand Union Building on the campus of MSU. And on Election Day only, there will be additional places of deposit from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Gallatin County Fairgrounds, 901 North Black, Hope Lutheran Church at 2152 West Graff Street, at the Belgrade Special Events Center, 220 Spooner Road, the River Rock Community Center at 101 River Rock Road, the Gallatin Gateway Community Center at 145 Mill Street, Manhattan Christian High School, 8000 Churchill Road, and the Bridger Canyon Fire Station, 8081 Bridger Canyon Road. We hope this information helps you to get registered, to get a ballot, to vote a ballot, and return it this year for the 2020 general election. Continuing our discussion about the voting process for this 2020 general election, I'm joined by County Commissioner Don Seifert. Thanks for joining me today. I was kind of wondering, hoping to get your perspective about this election. I know that you were given the opportunity to decide for the county whether it would be an all-male ballot or not. The governor basically gave each county the decision individually. Is that correct?
Yeah, we got the directive from the governor that said that we had the option, whether the standard, what we would call a polling place election or a mail-in election. And we visited with Casey and Eric, our clerk and recorder and elections administrator, and we felt very comfortable going with a mail election. There was lots of concerns, such as being able to find people to man a polling booth, and we've got numerous polling areas in the county. Typically, those people are older volunteers, a vulnerable group, and we actually conduct a lot of mail elections. Matter of fact, the only two that we conduct are the every 2 years when we do the state and federal primary and general elections. Everything else, school boards, all of that is a mail election. Municipal elections are mail as well. So we're very comfortable with the security and the integrity of mail ballot election. My personal opinion is that it's more secure than a polling place election, because what a mail ballot does is it actually gives you time, mm-hmm. where we've got folks that can actually look at the ballot, verify the signatures on the ballot, and so it's my feeling is it's more secure. So we looked at that, and we're, like I said, the commission was very comfortable with the mail ballot election, and so we, after visiting with our staff, we figured that was the way to go.
Just curious, I know that when you had the meeting to make the decision, there was a lot of public comment, or at least some public comment, and probably some of it was concerned and opposed to the idea of doing the election. I just wonder, what idea do you have about the source of some of that concern? Is it just an issue of not really having enough of an understanding of the process and the way that the elections work and the safeguards that are in place?
You know, I think that's true. I think that a lot of the information was coming from national media. I would say that maybe there are states in the country that maybe have issues with security with a mail ballot. Montana is not that kind of an operation. We're very secure. And that was my feeling, was what the only thing that I can do anything about as a commissioner is what we do in Gallatin County. And with security that we have, I felt really comfortable with it. So I think that was a large part of it. A lot of the information that people got was from national media and weren't that aware or informed of how that ballot operates in Montana. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been involved in it, but it certainly seems like in the past there have been discussions even about the two elections that are still sometimes being done with polling place elections, basically moving it all to mail-in balloting even before the pandemic. Have you been part of any of those discussions in the past?
When Charlotte Mills was the election administrator, clerk and recorder election administrator, we've had those discussions, and I believe there was a bill in the legislature last session or maybe two sessions ago where they took a look at that. They didn't pass that, but they improved the safeguards of the mail election. So I think it improved it. I think from a personal standpoint, I think that I would like to see all mail elections. I'm one of those guys that likes to go to a poll and vote. Yeah. I do that. I think it's a great sort of patriotic feeling to do that. Yeah. But the security and the integrity, which is, that's what we do, right? I mean, that's the one thing that sets us apart from so many countries of the world is having an election and to make sure that election is secure and is got good integrity. I think that's probably the most important thing we do.
Right. I agree with that, and I'm with you. There's the social aspect and something about that, right? Going to the polling place, you get the ballot, you go and mark it in the little booth and stuff, and I always did that. You know, I suppose there's a little bit of part of me that missed being able to do that, but it certainly, that void wasn't significantly large enough to make me feel like I just can't do this or I just don't want to do this. And so I hope that as people get more of an understanding about the actual process and the safeguards and the different steps that are put in place, they will have a more of a feeling of comfort about conducting elections this way. And I do think, you know, in the past, you go to the polling place and you kind of talk to the people that are working there, and it's the same people every time, and they don't get any younger every time any more than I do. And so, you know, I think regardless of what sort of nostalgia and feelings of you know, wanting to keep things the same people might have, that's something that needs to be recognized and acknowledged. Just, you know, people, younger generations, don't maybe feel the same about the elections, and they maybe don't feel the same compulsion to service election judges and stuff. And at some point, if you can't get people to service election judges, it doesn't matter. Right. How much you want to do it, it's just like you can't do it. So hopefully people can like look at all of these things together and kind of make their peace with the idea that this is going to be a mail election and it'll be okay. And I think, as far as I heard, the primary election was all mail. It pretty much was run the same way the general election will be, and I never heard of any issues or problems or wrinkles in the process.
No, and you're absolutely right. The primary of this year went off without a hitch. There wasn't a lot of protest or negative feedback on that, so I'm not sure what has amped up this general election. But I agree. I was born and raised in North Montana, and we went to the one-room country schoolhouse and cast votes, and that's what we did. I did it with my granddad. I did it with my mom. I did it with my dad, you know, as a little kid just hanging around. And in Gallatin County, we've changed. You know, we used to have polling places in lots of the smaller communities, you know, the schoolhouses north of Belgrade up through there. And as we've had less and less election judges, we've had to begin to consolidate a lot of those. We're always going to fewer and fewer polling places. And I think maybe one of the natural sort of processes will be that eventually those polling places will go away and we will be a mail-in election state.
Right, right. I think it's easy. I fall victim to this at times myself. You know, I live right here in Bozeman, and I could walk to the courthouse and do whatever I needed to do if I needed to. And I think it's pretty easy to forget that there are people in Gallatin County. It's certainly not as extreme as maybe if you live out an hour and a half north of Jordan or something, but there are people that aren't a few blocks away from a polling place and stuff. And it's easy to forget that some of these ideas of things that we want to keep and seize on as logistics become harder, that it makes it harder and harder for some of those people to vote by refusing to go in the direction of letting them vote by mail and stuff. And I know changes to the absentee process have done a lot to resolve that over the years. So, you know, I think Eric and Casey just mentioned that 85% of the voters are absentee voters. So that other 15%, I'm not really sure is worth having as big a fight over as we seem to be making.
Well, I think you're right, you know, and it's interesting in that, you know, we always talk about mail and is the mail slow and all of that. In Gallatin County, and I can really only speak to Gallatin County, our elections official have talked with the post office, and they've made special arrangements to get those ballots here in that last week as rapidly as possible. Of course, there's always the option to come to the courthouse and deposit them. You can actually even deposit a ballot in the satellite offices that we'll have around the county. And you could take a Big Sky ballot from that precinct up there and put it in the Manhattan box. That makes no difference. If it gets into a ballot box, it'll show up here at the courthouse and it will get counted. I think it's important to remember as well is that, you know, with every right is a responsibility. And the right to vote, in my mind, is a sacred right. And so it's also a sacred responsibility to make sure that you return your ballot in a timely manner to make sure that it gets counted. That's sort of the other half of the process. One half of the process is to vote or to mark your ballot. The other half of the process is to get it to the ballot machine to get it counted. And you know, this year Gallatin County is paying for the return postage on the ballots, and we did that in the primary election as well. But I will say without a doubt, since I've been commissioner, if we get a ballot that comes to the courthouse, postage due, we will pay that postage, and we will make sure that ballot gets counted, because if it gets into our building, we're going to count it if it's a legitimate ballot. So I can safely say we've never... Once a ballot got into the courthouse, we never turned it away because of postage.
I think, there were some things that I learned with talking with Eric and Casey about their process and the fact that apparently a significant number of people forget to sign the envelope when they send it in. And if they get one that's not signed, they don't just say, oh, well, and throw it away. They call or email and try to do everything that they can to rectify any problems if the signature doesn't match because you broke your arm and you're trying to sign with your left hand, they'll work with people and try to get that resolved. And I think that's important for people to know that there's a significant, significant amount of effort being expended by a lot of people to make sure that everybody gets the chance. And so given all of that effort, there is a responsibility of the people to actually avail themselves of all of those processes that are put in place and vote.
And you know, that speaks to the dedication of our voting staff, you know, our elected officials that run that voting process, the volunteers that we have here, that they take that extra time and to make sure that if there's a little bit of a discrepancy in a ballot, that they'll go out and verify that is a true ballot, a true signature, and that vote gets counted. And that's tremendous dedication on their part.
Yeah, it's. I suppose it's really not that hard to be cynical in this day and age. Maybe it's no harder, or maybe it's not really any different than it's been forever, but it certainly seems like when you're in the middle of it, it's pretty easy to be cynical, and it's easy to forget that, you know, there are a lot of people that are working really hard to make this work and make it work well, make it work right, and to make it have integrity, make it secure. And I hope that people will take some of this information and pay attention to it, and that it will help soothe their concerns, because there's certainly, you know, and I have a hard time telling if it's a lot of people or just a small number of very vocal people, but there's a lot of noise being generated this election, maybe more than I can ever remember in my life, about the election and all of this stuff. And so I hope that people can get some of this information and assimilate it a little bit and become less concerned, more certain that things are going to be done well and done right, and that they don't need to contribute to the noise. So.
Well, and that's true. You know, the phrase, these are the times that try men's souls, we're definitely there. I mean, there's concerns, there's doubt, there's fear in this state that we're in right now. And so it's important that we retain normalcy with our elections and remain secure and have integrity in those elections. And I think I'm confident in Gallatin County that we're there. I'm really happy with where elections are in Gallatin County.
Do you have any other things that we haven't touched on that you would like to say about the elections and the process?
I would just encourage anybody, if they've got any concerns about the election, to come to the courthouse, visit with our election administrator. Casey will be more than happy to show you the process. We have, as we get closer, we'll be doing some public testing of our machines and verification of our machines. Those are open to the public. They'll be noticed. I would encourage the people to come down and watch and see how these ballots are counted, and it's a pretty amazing process.
I think that's a good point. This process doesn't run in some secret underground bunker. It's all up above ground, and people can come watch. They can see for themselves, make sure for themselves how it works and that it is working right. So I want to thank you again for taking some time to talk about this today. It's a big issue, and I concur. It's maybe one of the biggest issues for our country and for its citizens. So thanks for taking the time to discuss about it.
Thank you very much.
We're continuing our discussion about elections here in Gallatin County and voting. And it's September 24th, and I'm talking to Charlotte Mills, the former Gallatin County clerk and recorder. And thank you for joining me today, Charlotte.
You're welcome.
So yeah, I was hoping you could give us a little history of your experience with Gallatin County elections. I know you were clerk and recorder for 12 years, and if I remember right, worked as the elections supervisor before that. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. So, it's about 14 years of experience that I had conducting elections, and the very first elections that we had is when late registration first started, and we hardly did any people. The lines were out the door. We finished at 12 o'clock, and it was like 150 people was all it was. And by the time I left, we were able to handle like 3,000 people through the office and be done by 9:30 at night. That's with the voting within the office.
Right. Yeah, I remember that was a period of a lot of change in elections in Gallatin County, along with a lot of growth. So those two things happening together probably made things pretty interesting.
Correct. And I don't know if you know, but I was a proponent of going all mail ballot for quite a number of years. Whenever the legislature would try to pass a bill to make it all mail-in as a mail-in state, I would often go up with the Secretary of State's office to testify to help get that through, but we were always unsuccessful. So we tried almost every year to turn Montana into a mail ballot state.
Right.
And one of the reasons is it gives everybody a chance to vote. It gives everybody the ballot at home so they could sit and look and be well educated about what's on the ballot to vote. And then we put in a lot of processes that were governed through the Secretary of State's office and through the laws as to how we were to handle all of those ballots and the signatures and problems and everything else.
Right. So I talked to Eric Simrod and Casey Hayes about the process, and they kind of said that the same thing, that really almost everything is covered by state law and statute. There are maybe county to county, there might be some slight variability in the way a little bit of the mechanics work about how you organize the people and stuff, but really most of it is in statute, so there's not
variability between counties across the state?
That's correct. Yes, it is. It is very much state legislation. You know, like there have been laws passed that are totally governing what we're doing.
Right. So when you started working in the elections office, were there any mail-in elections? There must have been some already by that time. Or
we had mostly polling place elections because the I came in an odd year in 2005, and so then the first actual federal election was 2006. And there were absentee voters and very few mail-in ballots. And as I took over, I started converting like the school elections and the city elections into mail ballot elections. And so we've been doing mail ballot elections in Gallatin County for every political subdivision for their elections since 2006. And it's only the federal general and the federal primary that we had to have polling place elections.
Right. Okay. Obviously, in your experience, you were comfortable with the way that the safeguards were developed and the way that the elections were handled, that the mail-in ballots were as secure as the ballots collected at polling places?
Yes, And in some cases, sometimes I actually think it's a little more secure.
Right.
Yeah. There was a group of about, 8 to 10 clerks and recorders, election administrators, that worked on a team in the Secretary of State's office, and I was privileged to be able to sit on that and actually help design the software to safeguard how we handle these elections and actually helped work with the Secretary of State's office for those few years that, like I said, I was in there on this team to help produce the guidelines and the trainings of how all of this worked.
You know, given all of the knowledge that you have about it and your history with how it developed and was improved over the years, I have a hard time understanding some of the concern that's being voiced currently, especially like the figure that I think I got from Eric and Casey was that somewhere in excess of 80% of the active voters in Gallatin County were registered for absentee ballots. So
that's
it
correct.
Seems like
there's
a lot of discussion going on about a relatively small segment of the voting population, it seems like to me.
Right. You know, like there's this discussion I've heard on national news that says absentees and, like absentee and mail ballot are the same, and then you hear that it's different. On the back end of that process in Montana, they're identical. The difference is an absentee you have to request, and a mail-in ballot is mailed to all active voters. And I think that's part of what is getting miscommunicated, because they think that I've heard, every single person gets a ballot mailed to them, and they don't. It's only active registered voters who have actually voted within the last couple of years. And there's a process that you can go through to remove the people who have passed away. And every mail ballot election, we always got back a lot of varied between 600 and 6,000 undeliverable ballots, because the post office, we actually put instructions on the outer envelope that tell the post office if it's undeliverable to send it back to us. And then state law governs how we get those ballots back out to people.
Yeah, so it seems to me like there's a period of time, I suppose, when somebody may have moved where the rolls might not be quite up to date, but there are processes in place to basically catch and resolve that over time. And
correct.
So,
and I can tell you that a lot of the clerks and recorders around the state actually do maintenance on their rolls, where we actually take of the list of the addresses, the names and the addresses, you send them to a mail, a mail source that the the company that we used here in Gallatin County, they actually can go through and identify the good addresses, the bad addresses, and then ahead of an election, you can send out a piece of information to the old address that is actually forwardable that would get to the new address, and a lot of people respond and get their registrations corrected that way. And then if they don't, we keep doing it until we know that they're an inactive voter and they wouldn't get a ballot.
Right. It seems to me like there are a number of safeguards and processes in place, and the risk of somebody, you know, sending out a ballot to someone who shouldn't get a ballot. I mean, that's probably the wrong term because, you know, if you're a citizen, you should probably get a ballot. But the discomfort over the idea that somehow, even if that did happen, that ballot would be just accepted by the elections office when it came back in. I think people miss that.
Right. And we also have signatures on file, you know, for the absentee request is on file, that signature, their registration is on signature. We have several, usually attached to people's voter registration are several different forms that have their signatures on it. And the people in my office were very conscious about checking those signatures. And if they didn't think that it looked right, then we passed it off to somebody else. And it was like two people had to agree that it was correct. And if not, then it went to the supervisor or to me to have it reconciled. And we had a lot of people, when we don't think that the signature matched, that we would notify the people. And so many people were really, really good about bringing their ID in and signing the ballot. And then we would take that signature that they had signed for us and put that on their record. So we had a very intense signature, you know, to look at all the signatures on every envelope. And every signature is checked. They're just not blindly sent through without checking.
Right.
And that's the way the law, the law actually even tells us what we are to look for when we're checking for signatures.
Wow. And so that currently in Gallatin County, it's a manual process. There's no automatic or electronic validation, pre-screening or anything. It's done by people.
No, it's done by people in the office.
Okay.
It's usually done by experienced people in the office.
And there is a process for checking if there's any doubts or concerns. And so,
correct.
Okay. Yeah, that, like I said, I think I don't know if you have any other thoughts about, maybe from what you've heard of discussions or seen about discussions about other reasons why people might be concerned. It seems to me, as far as I can see, that it's really mostly an issue of people not really knowing about the process. And so because they don't know there are all these things put in place, they assume it's not safe.
Yeah. And I would often have people who come in, who would come into the office, and I would talk about that, and I would invite them in to work. And several people came in and worked, and at the end, when they left, they would come up to me and go, I never had any clue that all of this went on in the background. And the other thing I can tell you is that the level of integrity in getting an election right amongst the 56 election administrators for Montana is very high. And we all know that if one county messes up, it brings a bad look to the entire state. And so they all work very closely together to do as much the same county to county as they can.
Right.
There's another point, too, that I've heard is, like, people will sign up for a ballot, like in Billings, and then they have it mailed to them from Billings and one from Bozeman. But within Montana, we were mandated by federal law to have a software system that was integrated from county to county. Because when I first came, it wasn't. We were autonomous. And now the software that is in Montana, every county uses. And if a person moves from Billings to Bozeman, you go in and you grab that Billings record and you move it to Bozeman within the computer system. If there's a ballot that's already been issued from Billings, you cannot move that voter until the Billings office voids out that record. uh-huh. you know, like that ballot that had been sent out. And so then when that's voided, it would allow Gallatin County to issue that voter that's standing in the in front of you at the counter a ballot and give them the ballot. If by chance the ballot was voted in Billings and sent back to Billings, there is no way that Billings could accept it because the voter resides in Gallatin County now. So the software has been, this committee that I was on with the Secretary of State's office, we met like 2 or 3 times a year to go through and make and suggest changes to the software. And then all those changes would be updated and we would test them and then push them out to all the counties. And so the system has become very secure over the life of that software.
Uh-huh. And this was software that it was kind of developed with the needs of the Montana election offices in mind?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know all of the different details. I was fortunate enough to get to watch a provisional ballot count in one of the elections, I don't know, maybe 2008 yeah. or so. And you know, I didn't really know all of the details about the process by any means. And I'm still learning some new things, but the more I learn, the less concerned. I wasn't concerned before about the integrity of the elections, but it's a trying time for everyone, and it's easy to get kind of caught up in things. But
there's a lot of stuff that gets miscommunicated in by the media, and then people grab onto that miscommunication and then spread it like wildfire rather than actually going to the source and identifying themselves with how it really works.
Right. Yeah, I think people forget that it's easy to get cynical about elected officials, I guess. But, you know, in the end, these are people that the people chose and that are, you know, working really hard and doing all they can to do this. And I think people lose sight of the fact that they're actually our friends and neighbors are in these offices doing everything they can to make the process work well and to make sure the elections have integrity. And the more you learn about it, the more you find out that, yeah, they've done a really good job, I think. And so I hope that people will take the time, like you said, to gather some real information instead of innuendo and myth and make an informed decision about how this works.
Yeah. I think that the people of Montana should have confidence in the election and the mail ballot election and the way it's run within Montana. Because Montana has, I think, some pretty high standards. Well, like everything else, we're, you know, like we're grassroots people who have grown up in the state and want to make sure that everything's done correctly. You know, other states, we don't necessarily know how that's done, but when I was part of this, they called it MeTAC. It was a technology advisory board with the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State would go to their national conventions, and then, you know, like the election deputies would go to the state election deputies would go. And it was always reported back to us that Montana is one of the states that has the highest standards for elections. I know some people probably don't like that, but it's a good thing. And this time, it's a very good thing to have the standards set that high.
Right. I think that's true. And I think that, you know, I understand that, you know, the population in Montana is a lot lower than in a lot of states. So if we had 20 times as many people, it might be tougher to be as careful about each individual vote and validate and give people the opportunity to correct and update. But I think people can enjoy that fact that here in Montana, you know, all of this effort's gone in and they have a really good chance of, in the event that something does go wrong, like, you know, they said a lot of people forget to sign their envelope when they mail ballots back in, that they'll be contacted and given an opportunity to correct that. So, you know, in the end, if you make an effort to vote and to deliver your ballot, it seems like the counties in Montana are making a real, real concerted effort to make sure that that vote gets counted and gets counted right.
It is. Right. It is. We think every ballot needs to be counted, and it's like, you're exactly right. If that voter has made the concerted effort to get their ballot in, we do everything we can to get it corrected so that it can be counted. Now, see, Mike, I also heard on national news that there are like six states where they're allowed to accept ballots like up to 3 days after the election, and that's not the case in Montana. They have to be received in the election office on election day, or they're not. The only difference are people who are military who email, and as long as that email is sent by 8 o'clock that night, even though we may not get it until the next day, those are all counted. And so, and there's like a federal write-in process that happens. But if you have a ballot, it can't be just postmarked. It actually has to be received in our office by election day. And our postal system that I worked with here in Gallatin County went way beyond what they were required to do to help make every ballot get to us. The carriers would pull out, would see a ballot because we have, they all know now what the envelopes look like. And they pull out all the ballots on election day that they pick up at people's houses or in the mailboxes. And then we go out and pick them up. Our postmaster actually drove to Big Timber, met the postmaster from Billings in Big Timber, because he had brought some of our ballots that were in the distribution center.
Oh.
And they met in Big Timber and exchanged the ballots for us, and then our postmaster delivered them to us. So the post office has been getting a lot of bad rap because, true, the delivery times are less than they used to be. You cannot mail a ballot like on Friday night and expect it to get here by Tuesday election day in Gallatin County anymore.
Right.
It needs to be mailed really early. But they do everything they can with ones that they see to get to us, to get them counted.
There are another group of public servants that are working hard for us that I think we lose track of that sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me. Do you have any other thoughts about the election or the process that we didn't cover?
No, the election isn't over on election day. Even though the voting stops on election day, the election actually goes for a long time because there's cleanup. So people who haven't signed their ballot and we notify them, so they've delivered it like at 7:30 on election night and it's not signed, we called that night and emailed them if we had their email, a form that they could actually sign and send a copy of their ID or come in the next day. And so there's like 3 days for those little problem ballots to get resolved. And then that's part of the provisional counting that happens 7 days after the election.
Right.
But the majority of all the ballots counted in Montana are counted on election day or the following morning early. Because the election is notoriously getting done.
I know. You went through some challenging
elections. I have been beat over
the head
so much for that. No, my philosophy was is the integrity of the election is far more important than getting the results to the media.
Right. I know that in this day and age, people are in a hurry and don't want
to
wait for things.
Well, everything's so instantaneously.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I guess if I had to pick, I'd always pick accurate over quick in an election too.
Yeah.
So,
well, the one thing, if you wanted me to give some advice to the voters of Gallatin County, I would tell them to please, as soon as they get their ballot, sit down with an educated view, vote their ballot, and either mail it right away or hand deliver it right away. Because if they wait until election day, it puts a lot of strain on the election office with having to go through those processes and checking those ballots. So if they can do them, because we always had like 60% of the ballots were already checked signature-wise, and then it seemed like there were always a huge number of ballots that are delivered on election day, and you still have to go through that process. So it's like a three-ring circus going on election day, and it just helps everything go a lot smoother if people will either hand deliver their ballot early or mail it early so that it gets there.
Great.
And they can go online to the Secretary of State's office or there's a My Voter page through the clerk and recorder, through the election department that you can click on, go into the Secretary of State's. It's like this whole database for Montana, and you can see if your ballot has been returned.
Right. Yeah, so people can
and
check
accepted.
And make sure. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Well, yeah, I hope we'll put that reminder out there periodically that people should, you know, everybody knows that they're going to be getting their ballot in the mail this year. So
right.
When they get it, go ahead and vote and get it back. And I think the county's taking a lot of steps to make it easier with some of the satellite offices and the drop boxes
right.
in a lot of different places. So hopefully, you know, they're trying to do everything that they can to make it easier for people to vote too. So hopefully people will accept their responsibility, take advantage of all of that work and do the right thing and get out and vote.
Correct. I agree.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me and look forward to seeing how this election goes.
This is Bob Wall, and that concludes our show on voting in the 2020 general election in Gallatin County. It's September 24th, and I was just talking to the former Gallatin County Clerk and Recorder, Charlotte Mills. At the start of the program, which we recorded on September 18th, I was joined by the current Gallatin County Clerk and Recorder, Eric Semrod, and the election supervisor, Casey Hayes. After that, I spoke with Gallatin County Commissioner Don Seifert. I hope you found this program informative and learned some things about the process of voting here in Gallatin County and throughout Montana. We strongly encourage you to get registered and to vote in the 2020 general election. KGVM has additional programs about voting and about the election. You can visit kgvm.org and look for the government section. There are subsections there about voting and the election. We thank you for tuning in, and we ask that you please get out and vote in the upcoming election.